through in this microphone? All right. All right. Get the frogs out of my throat. Open up my laptop. Is there somebody who can grab me a podium? One of those little black music stands from that cart over there? Forgot to grab everything. How are we doing this morning? Not good. Okay. All right. See if we can get everything going here. Thank you. Appreciate it. Ta-da! Here we are. We're starting a new series called The Ritual Life, Simple Practices for Presence and Meaning. First of all, give a big hand for Grace and Carolyn. They are a couple of my favorite people. I love both of them. Together and individually, the energy they bring and the music and the stylings are just so much fun. I really appreciate you too. Good meditation, Rod. I appreciate that. We all can identify with the monkey mind. And then there he is in the back. Hi, Todd. Good morning. Todd wasn't here last week, and I held my best stuff back because a few weeks ago, I was told that, or I was here when he took some shots at my hair. Who knew somebody with a voice so soft could have words that cut so sharply? It's okay, Todd. I've been in regular therapy, and my therapist is helping me work through that. So, I'll send you the therapy bill. Okay. One little aside this week before we get into stuff there. Yesterday was, 2 days ago, was my dog's birthday, 16th birthday. This is Bella. Some of you met her last weekend at the bonfire there. She turned 16 on May the 1st there. She is still going strong, and she is such an adorable little dog. Brightens my day. We're in this series starting a series called The Ritual Life, and I got an email this week that said, I got a number of emails with some good feedback. We asked regularly for feedback and crave feedback, and somebody shared like that they wished we were a little more comfortable with our use of the word God. And specifically, they said they wish we were less reluctant to use the word God as a quote, broad, non-literal term for the mystery of all that is. Okay, I'm like, yeah, let's get into that. We're going to be talking about that in this series for sure, our relationship with that word among other things. And whether that word works for you or not, the instinct behind it is ancient. This quote is commonly attributed to the AC/DC road manager Barry Taylor, although it's not quite, I couldn't quite firm that up, so that's why I used attributed to. But I like the quote. God is the name of the blanket we throw over mystery to give it shape. The person who shared that email also shared that quote as an example of like how can we talk about God like this? And I'm like, sure. We are, as human beings, we're ritual-making creatures. Since the dawn of time, we have used ritual and ceremony and practices. We've used art and music, especially music, and rhythm, and chant, and fire. We've used all of these things as human beings because we are ritual-making creatures. We are meaning-making creatures. We mark beginnings, and we mark endings. When new lives come into the world, we celebrate. We bring gifts, and we are happy. When people pass away, we share our sadness, and we also mark the endings, oftentimes not quite as well. We gather around sound and symbols. We gather around food, around movement and dance and memory. And humans have engaged in these kind of behaviors for, as far as anthropologists and archaeologists can determine, for well over 100,000 years. I'll give a few book recommendations in the email newsletter this week, but if anybody's ever read anything by Yuval Noah Harari, Sapiens is a great start. So Sapiens is a wonderful book. Another book is A Brief History of Everyone Who's Ever Lived, and I'm spacing on the name of the author for that one. But there's a number of these kind of books that really trace our human history, and it's fascinating. Early Homo sapiens have marked these types of beginnings and endings with ritualistic practices for well over 100,000 years. One of the oldest examples is the Kafza Cave, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, in Israel. It's over 100,000 years old. This is one of the first examples that we have of a ritualized burial where ochre was used and other things were buried with this person. So this burial was done in an intentional way. That's why we say that humans have been doing this for a while, because this is more than just a simple grieving. This is a ritualistic form of grief. There was a special symbolic treatment for the dead. And then in the Shenandoah Cave in Iraqi Kurdistan, this one I like to bring up because even our close relatives, the Neanderthals, as more and more archaeology reveals and anthropologists study these remains, we're finding out that even our Neanderthal cousins were capable of much higher thought than is depicted in the cartoons with the caveman. This is the Shenandoah Cave in Iraqi Kurdistan. This is about 70,000 year old, and these are Neanderthal remains. And it's called the flower burial because they were the bones were arrayed in a flower-like way, in a way that told the archaeologists that this was an intentional act. And you can see here some of these parts that were displayed. So there's the palm with the left first rib, and then the left carpal's there. The fingers arrayed in a certain way, along with the stone tool and the shoulder blade. So the bones were displayed in a ritualistic fashion, as we could only determine as a way of dealing with grief, to honor the memory. And these are our Neanderthal cousins from 70,000 years ago. And then the image that I've used as the backdrop for this series is the well-known cave, the Cueva de la Manos, Argentina cave, which means the cave of the hands. And these are for anywhere between 9,000 to 7,000 years old. And it's a beautiful cave. I would love, has anybody been there in person? This would be a bucket list place to go and see. All of these handprints were done over a period of centuries to thousands of years, depending on the dating, which is pretty awesome. It's like the version of a bathroom stall. John was here, right? I mean, that's the best that they could do, right? It's like, hey, here's me. Do me next. All right. We don't even know what that symbolized, but it meant something to someone thousands of years ago. Humans naturally do this kind of thing. We're not the only species that do this, and we'll get into that probably a little bit later, but let's not give ourselves too much credit and think that we're just sitting atop the species pyramid, ruling everything as God intended. That's complete tongue-in-cheek. So do modern enlightened humans need ritual? That's a question we asked this morning in pre-talk. It's one that I want to wrestle with in the coming weeks. What is the role? So like this kind of stuff and you know, these ritualistic ways of grieving loss and stuff, is that just something that was good for like our, quote, caveman and woman ancestors? That was something that was unenlightened, and now that we're more enlightened, you know, we don't do that kind of stuff anymore. Or do we? Like, I mean, what are the weird rituals that we do? I asked what the word ritual meant for in pre-talk and just kind of let everybody go cold. And I mean, we had examples of the national anthem and singing the national anthem at a baseball game. And for some people, that now is even becoming a conflicted feeling. That's a ritual that's strange. But somebody shared an example of a recent hockey game where a person was singing and their mic was cutting out and they were singing "O Canada." And then the whole stadium, full of also Americans as well, joined in to sing the national anthem with the "O Canada," which is pretty amazing. So, like, we're ritual-making, meaning-making creatures. We need containers for grief, for gratitude, for transition, for belonging. And I'll be honest, as Westerners, we're really, really behind the ball on this. We don't do this very well at all. If you spend any amount of time traveling internationally, you'll find that most cultures are quite comfortable with ritual and ceremony and ceremonial containers. They're quite comfortable doing things that we straight-laced folks don't like to do. You don't even have to travel outside the country. If you think that you've been to all the kinds of funerals, try going to a funeral in Louisiana and with the trombones and the dancing and the wailing and all of the things that are incorporated with that culture and that blending of cultures. That's within our own country, and there's far more wild ceremonies all around the world. We're just not really comfortable with ritual, with expressing ourselves. But Robin Wall Kimmerer, who wrote Braiding Sweetgrass, A Service Berry, we quote her a lot. She says, from her indigenous background, she said in an interview, she said, "Our elders say that ceremony is the way that we can remember to remember." I like that. Ceremony is the way we remember to remember. You know, you pick up your phone and you're browsing through and a photo pops up or a memory from the past, right? And you'd forgotten that you forgot about that until something popped up and you remembered to remember. Ceremony and ritual is how we can remember to remember. It's ways that we can ritualize, commemorate important things that happen, to mark transitions, to give voice to deep felt emotions, deep somatic release. This means body-based. I've quoted and talked about The Body Keeps the Score, that book. We hold trauma from our past within our very bodies, and the ability to move, to express ourselves vocally, to scream if necessary, to howl, to moan, you name it, and I've tried it in some version of ceremony. Not everything, but I'm willing to try just about anything once. And some things don't land with me. Other things connect with me far more powerfully than I was even anticipating. Ritual's powerful. And ritual is more than just routine. We talked about the difference between these words, and I'm going to kind of revise these definitions maybe as we go, but let me try these out for you because these are sort of three similar words that I want to differentiate between a little bit. The first is the word routine, and the word routine we say, for the purposes of this conversation, This is a repeated action that helps us function. Somebody asks, is that the same as habit? And at least as of this morning, I have not been able to think of a difference between a habit and a routine. Unless somebody has some ideas we can talk about afterwards. But we'll use those kind of interchangeably. It's something that helps us function, from the way that we brew our coffee in the morning to the way that we feed our dogs or cats, the way that we get into bed every night, our preferences. These are things that are routine behaviors. And we as Homo sapiens are very prone to routines, not unlike many mammals. If you have dogs or cats or kids, they're all the same. They all want things at very inconvenient times. And they have their routines. So a routine is a repeated action that helps us function. A ritual, I would say, is any action that is done with meaning and intention. At first, earlier in the week, I think I may have used the definition, a repeated action. But I dropped the word repeated because I think rituals can be standalone. We had some examples of that we were thinking through this morning. A bat mitzvah or bar mitzvah marks a coming of age. There are cultural coming of age things. You only have one 21st birthday. One sweet 16 if you're Bella. There's these special one-time things. So I don't think it's a repeated thing, but it's imbued with meaning and intention. So a ritual doesn't have to be religious. You can have a ritualistic way that you make your coffee in the morning. If you make your coffee with intention and mindfulness, and if that becomes part of your daily sacred moment, your grind, thank you. Thank you, that's Shannon back there. He's here all week. Oh my goodness. Yes. Oh goodness, where was I? Any action done with meaning and intention. Okay, and then one last word here, ceremony. So ceremony is just a more formal or communal ritual that's used to mark something important. This is just a ritual that's elevated to a higher level. This is, baptisms and christenings and weddings, funerals. If you immigrate to a new country and you're a citizen, there's a citizenship ceremony. We have ceremonies for all kinds of things. Again, as human beings, we've done that for thousands, tens of thousands of years. We love our ceremonies. We go crazy for our ceremonies. Different cultures have different ceremonies, and some just really go all out with it. I do think it's funny that we, as a mostly white crowd in here, sit and talk about the ceremonies, and we could just think that the ceremonies we think of probably are some of the most boring ceremonies. How many boring weddings or funerals or christenings or things have you been to where you're like, okay, I'm really just here because my cousin asked me to be here. I don't want to be here. I'm hoping there's a good refreshment bar afterwards. We go through all these things that are, not less than pleasant. So rituals take all shapes and forms and sizes, and our ceremonial containers that we exist in are quite unique. I would hope that in this series we're going to make some space for us to just widen the aperture on our minds to allow some new and fresh practices in, to be informed by other cultures and communities and races, because there's some deep wisdom to our indigenous backgrounds that have been all but ignored in modern times as we have kind of poo-pooed ceremony and ritual as something that we're a little too enlightened to do anymore. David White, I love David White. He says, routine is the way we step down from what is absolutely extraordinary into the miracle of an ordinary day and an ordinary hour. Routine is disguised ritual. So that gives you something to think about this week. What routines have maybe become elevated to the point of ritual in your life? What is something that was very mundane in one moment that before long you did it enough that you realized this action is sacred to me? It is holy and consecrated. No longer are you just simply doing a motion and going through the motions, but maybe you're feeding your dog after just getting them back from the vet and realizing that you're going to have a few more months with them. And maybe the act of feeding your pet in its final days becomes a ritual that allows you to express grief and love and all of the other messy feelings that you can't put into words. Can you see how something as simple as putting the kibbles in the dog bowl can be elevated from even the most casual daily routines into a sacred, holy moment? Because rituals and ceremonies can be containers for growth. I'll share two examples from my background. Ruth Zwald, who we are going to have close out this series, and she's one of our core regular teachers here. She's an amazing person. She has a background as a former minister that later in life came into her own in the path of a Peruvian shaman. And she's studied under this form of shamanism, and she hosts ceremonial containers at her property or at an offsite UCC church building. She'll host these containers around equinox or solstice or other celestial themed events. We've done some weird and woo-woo stuff there. This is called an angan. And this is, I'll let Ruth tell you more about it because it's so fascinating. But she makes one for the new year. And at each time we go, this time we had written some words on a little wooden feather. And then we tied it to the angan. And then later on, as we were done, we would just go up there with a ribbon and then would just express some sort of an intention as a way of closing that ceremonial container. And would just tie that ribbon. And then that angan throughout the year takes on this character. There's nothing inherently fancy about the mask. I think she bought it, she said, at Michael's, or it's like some kind of a paper mache thing. She hand painted it. But it's a simple thing imbued with meaning. This is one of the trying to think of the name for it. Any you helping me out there, Valerie? What? It's a form of mandala, but it's we'll call it a mandala for right now. It was a sheet, and each of the directions face the north, the east, the south, and the west. We would take different components, bring them in, and at different times throughout the ceremony would put it on there. And it's a form of art that's, when it's done, is either bundled back up and then is either buried or burnt in some way. I've also, outside of Ruth, had my first taste of healthy ritual and ceremony. It was back in 2016 when I went to Iona, Scotland with John Philip Newell. And this was one of the pictures I kind of stealthily took on my phone while I was sitting up front, nice and close, because I'm a teacher's pet. And I loved that whole week, we did such crazy stuff that felt so ancient and like part of like your primal being. Even the Abbey itself that we went in, and every morning we would have just 30 minutes of silent meditation. So you walk into this cold Abbey, and it's Scotland, so it's often rainy and cloudy, and you're bundled up, and it's early in the morning, and you're sitting on either these hard wood, squeaky pews or these stone chairs. I mean, this was not comfortable at all. But you're sitting there, and then you're breathing. And in the space of just a minute or two, as everybody comes in, the whole atmosphere just becomes charged with, I can't even put words to it. Simple behavior, simple practices done with meaning and intention can transport you, can transform you. Rituals give shape to our attention. They help us mark transitions. They help us grieve, and they help us give voice to these parts of ourselves that we struggle to give voice to. I'm going to invite Grace and Carolyn back up onto the stage here. And one of the things that I've asked Carolyn to do that she's been graciously willing to do afterwards is, in place of our talk back, and this is for anybody who wants to do this, because this is one of those things that, like, hey, it's not going to be for everybody. And just kind of like my comedy last week there, as I said, so, like, you know, I'm not going to be for everyone. I think one of the bands I like, the Magic City Hippies, has a song that starts out and it says that I may not be everyone's cup of tea, but I am someone's shot of whiskey. So I don't know what they had to do with anything, but let's welcome Grace and Carolyn. You're going to be the shot of, that's where we're going, yeah. Carolyn may not be everyone's cup of tea, but she's somebody's shot of whiskey. And she is offering the tea all the same. So here's what we're doing. In place of regular talkback, she's got an assortment of percussive instruments. So this is kind of like an old school. We were saying, could we call it a drum circle? But then we said it's sort of like drum circle adjacent. And but we're going to just, afterwards, for anybody who wants to, play around with percussion and rhythm. She has her PhD in the thing, for crying out loud.
You've awarded that to me. It's honorary only.
It is honorary, but I feel that you know more about percussive instruments
than
anybody.
But it has been my path to become Dr. Beat.
It is pretty awesome. So if you want to stick around afterwards for that, that's going to be in the Woodbine Room down the hall. And we're just going to be starting to explore different areas where ritual and ceremony and container can bring us to interesting places. So thank you both for joining us again this morning. I'll hand it over to you.